You're listening to the B2B Revenue Executive Experience, a podcast dedicated to helping executives train their sales and marketing teams to optimize growth. Whether you're looking for techniques and strategies or tools and resources, you've come to the right place. Let's accelerate your growth in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, everyone, to the B2B Revenue Executive Experience. I'm Carlos Noche, and unfortunately, Lisa Schneier, my co-host partner, is not with us today. She's off working with some of our great clients. But today, we do have a great topic with a great guest and a former client. A good friend, Eric, here is going to be talking about a very important topic today, and that's the important part of sales, which is having religion around your ICP, your ideal customer profile. So Eric is the former CEO, CRO at Splash, a fast-growing SaaS platform in event marketing. I first met Eric when he was SVP of worldwide sales at Airship. Eric brings us over 20 years experience in sales, marketing, and leadership roles, and a proven track record of driving growth, innovation, and customer success in the mobile and digital domains. Hi, Eric. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks, Carlos.
So we always start the podcast getting our guests to know you a little bit better personally. What is something that you're passionate about that those that only know you through business might be surprised to know about you?
I'm a big outdoors guy. I love scuba diving. I love sailing. I love hiking and backpacking. Can never seem to get enough time doing any of those things because all of those things require you to be offline, which is maybe why I like it so much. It's a way to completely disconnect. I was diving last week.
They can't call you while you're diving.
That's right. You're at 70, 80 feet deep. No one's calling you. No one can even get a hold of you if they need to. It's a zen way to get through some good experiences.
I tried diving and I was so excited with the romance of it all until I got down there and Darth Vader showed up because all I could hear was myself breathing.
I was talking with the guy we were diving with, and we have all kinds of inventions that need to be invented for scuba diving to make it less noisy and less about you. Like all you hear is your own head half the time.
I want to try one of those masks where you don't have to just breathe through your mouth. Have you ever tried that?
I have not. Someone, when I was in the dive shop a few weeks ago, somebody was getting fitted for one of those. And I like the concept of it, but I'm always clearing my nose as you get deeper to take the pressure off. And they have mechanisms for that, but I would just be a little worried. I wouldn't be able to clear my nose. I'd have a headache the whole time.
So when we talk about this whole idea about creating an ICP, first off, can you define it for me? What do you mean by one and why is one so important?
ICP, I think it's one of the most misunderstood parts and misused parts of terminology in sales. Ideal customer profile, a lot of people have a very generic idea of what it is. It's a customer who comes from a certain industry and they will buy your software. And in reality, what you're looking for is, particularly in businesses that have recurring revenue, which is where I spend most of my time, a customer who continues to buy and expand for years and years and years. And that's a really different thing than how salespeople or sales management thinks about an ICP. It's the who's going to buy from us now versus who's going to be this great customer years from now. And if you get both those things dialed in, really study that customer who sticks around, they feel like the product was purpose-built just for them out of the box. And they are so excited about the product today. They're excited about the roadmap you already have. Then the sales team eventually gets to this point of higher win rates, lower cost of acquisition, better flow through. Everybody feels like a rock star on the sales team. And the customers stick around. They become great stories that you can reference for years to come. So ideal customer profile is that customer that becomes invested in the long-term part of your business that you are already building today.
So in dealing with a lot of startups in my business, what's interesting is it seems like a lot of companies want to build a platform technology. In fact, VCs are always like, hey, you need a platform so you can reach a bigger market. And the problem with it is like, okay, who buys? Oh, Carlos, you know, we could do a lot of things. So how do you get, you know, like these founders that invented this cool technology to literally sit down and focus and go, no, I get it. We could sell to thousands of different roles. We have to pick two or three. We have to have a starting point. And how specific do you need to get?
I think you need to get as specific as you possibly can and get more specific over time. And part of that is studying who's not renewing with the business or who are you not winning with the business the way you want to win them. If you find the sales team is really excited about a customer and you're in just long negotiations about pricing and term and all that stuff, you got to wonder, is this customer really committed to the product that you got? And is it going to be worth the effort? Or could you go get three customers in the same amount of time at a full price that fit better? It's the curse of both, you know, what you're talking about is the curse of both things. The sales team, who you got a bird in hand, you want to win that deal. We've all been there. And it's like, I'm just going to muscle through it. It's going to be a heroic win, right? And it's going to make my number, it's going to make the company's year. And you've got at the same time, the entrepreneurial founders who are saying, yeah, this could be a whole new market for us. If we get a customer like this, we can go get 20 more of them. All we have to do is blah, 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 which is basically hijack the roadmap, distract the engineering team, have the support team deal with use cases they're not used to dealing with. And so that one deal can have just tremendous consequences. And so how do you get the founders, the entrepreneurial side to say, we're going to focus where we can win? It's because if you do that really well, if you can really, really master that and say no to things that are not just far off the ICP, but just even one ring outside of the ICP, just a hard no to those deals, then you can build a superior product and squeeze out the competition for that space. And then as you want to expand your total addressable market, which is what everybody wants to do, then you go out and say, well, who's the next ICP that fits just outside our perfect fit today? And what are their product requirements? And it's an interesting challenge because you have to say, sales, you're not responsible for expanding TAM. You're responsible for going after the addressable market we have today. Product management, engineering, you're responsible for building the product that expands TAM. So go understand that new ICP that we want to go after that's maybe very close, very adjacent. And let's understand their requirements. Let's build those requirements. Let's test that. Let's get some rapid prototyping and see if that new ICP can fit into that larger target zone. And then take it to sales once the product's out there. If you do it the other way around, you end up just completely distracting your whole business and not winning the customers you should be winning.
All right, Eric, I'm sold. However, you know, we've all seen these companies as like, yeah, I'm all in, Eric. However, I got a quota this quarter. I got pressure to try to bring in this year. We're behind on the number. You know, this one may not look like the ones that we think we want to go after, but oh, it's an incredible account. Oh, if you can only get this logo.
Yeah, this is the one. It's the magic deal. Believe me, I have a whole, you know, lifetime of that quarterly pressure. My holidays run on quarterly cycles because it's all about what can we get done every quarter. And so I definitely understand it. Everywhere I've been, this is one of the first exercises we do is lock in the ICP and then say no, hard no to everything. And it takes about a quarter of adjustment. It takes this really terrible, terrifying quarter of, are we going to have enough opportunities to make the number? And you can only do it if you've got alignment with marketing, you've got alignment with sales, you've got alignment with customer success, because everybody's got to focus on that. If marketing doesn't have religion or an ICP, they're not going to bring you the opportunities that you want. They're going to have content that speaks to the wrong buyer. And so it starts with understanding the whole pipeline of ICP impact. But you get down to that one point, and yeah, that one deal might be the deal. This year, it's going to make your number, but next year, they won't renew. Not without hijacking the roadmap. Not without saying, hey, listen, we paid you a ton of money last year. We are so dissatisfied. This is not the product that you sold us. You told us it was going to be able to do these things, and it can't. So for us to renew, we need to have this commitment, and that has to be done in 6 months. And there goes your roadmap for 6 months or a year. And those customers, they rarely become satisfied. They've just become a headache on the entire business and a distraction for everybody. If you take away the religion on ICP, then suddenly, yeah, that one deal was an exception. Why not this other deal? And why not that other one? And that's why it has to be religion. You just have to really passionately believe and be able to say hell no to those deals. Walk away with pride. And if you're not making your numbers, there's something else going on. Like if you got an ICP that the market's too small, you got some other problems that you need to address before you start going crazy and building custom products for people.
It sounds like you also kind of need to get the board behind you, because I mean, they're usually the ones that are causing some of your pressure.
That's exactly right. You know, of all the diligence that investors do in a business and they talk to your customers, they don't have the same, generally speaking. There are some really great board members and operators and investors who get this, but a lot of them just don't have that depth of understanding the importance of the ICP. And I spend a lot of time coaching the board on this process and this change before we get into it. And also that really terrifying white knuckle quarter of change. In my experience, that quarter always comes out great, but you start out feeling like, yikes, the pipeline looks thinner than it's ever looked. But what you've really done is gotten rid of the garbage. You've gotten rid of the stuff that drives down win rate and just distilled your pipeline to the stuff that closes. I mean, really, you should be you should be seeing your win rates go up 30, 40% once you do this. And I've been at places where win rates were 8% or 11% when I started. And we drive that up to 28, 31% win rates by focusing on ICP with religion. It's hard to get there, but boy, it's really rewarding when you get there. And you know how good it feels when your win rate, if your win rate's 11%, that means 89% of the deals that you talk to and touch are lost. Talk about feeling nonstop rejection, feeling like your product isn't good for anything. It's really demoralizing on a sales team. But when your win rate, you know, one out of every three deals that you touch, you win, you feel like you're walking on air. It's the most amazing feeling ever for a sales team.
So it sounds like, you know, how do you get sales to understand your ICP and follow through with it? Because, like, for example, you know, you and I have rolled out value selling a couple of times. And one of the things we start with is, hey, who's our buying personas? Who are we selling to? You know, what are their business drivers? And sometimes I talk to accounts and they're like, oh, well, Carlos, it varies. I'm like, you're the one selling. So help me understand. Give me your top three or give me three good ones. Oh, well, what are we selling? And what's the situation? And what part of the world are we in? And I go, man, if you know, they really struggle with focus sometimes. How do you get sales, you know, or how do you prepare sales to really go after that ICP?
It takes the whole pipeline to join forces on this, because it's marketing really needs to understand it. Let me start with actually the end part of this. A lot of where we do qualification in sales today is at the SDR level. And SDRs are great. They're enthusiastic, but they're young, right? They're generally not too far out of college. They haven't had a whole lot of business conversations in their life. And now we want them to have more business conversations on a daily basis than anybody else in the company has. We're asking them to speak a whole new language. And if you don't have your ICP dialed in, you might be asking them to speak five or six new languages, you know, as far as different use cases, different buyer types. And if you really get it focused on, this is the language of the buyer, this is the one buyer that we're going after, this is their language, then it gets very, very simple. And it's very, very much a virtuous cycle. All of this is a virtuous cycle, because now the SDRs can immediately grok the playbook, speak the language, and get their arms around who they're selling to. They master the stories very, very quickly. The value selling stuff resonates so immediately because they don't have to learn all these different ways to speak. And in fact, they kind of sound like experts because they've learned the nuance of the language of that industry. And so they can even come across feeling very consultative when they dial that in. So it's, I think a lot of it begins with, is marketing going after the right pipeline, the right content, the right kind of air cover from branding and PR? Is the SDR team doing a good job of requalification? Back in the day, we used to use BANT, budget authority, need, and timing as qualification. And that has nothing to do with ICP. That just says anybody with a budget is an ideal customer. BANT is good for qualification on the timing of a deal if it's the right fit. But ICP is understanding the nuance and the firmographics of the company. And now with all the data that's out there about businesses and buyers, there's so much stuff you can do to get very, very detailed. And the tools that we use, you know, is when leads come in through Marketo, you can score those based on the firmographics that you grab from Zoom Info or Datadog or wherever you're grabbing the data from. So you can score it automatically. Goes to the SDRs. The SDRs take a good look to make sure the data did the right thing. Rescore it or send it back. Disqualify it. And then they have the first conversation and make sure that, you know, this is an ICP. And do they have BANT or whatever need qualifications you're using? And it starts there. I think that's where it starts. The AEs should not be getting deals in the pipeline. They should not have target lists that aren't ICP qualified. It should be very, very straightforward for an AE. The air that they breathe is ICP only, and they supply that air through marketing and SDR process.
So how specific should an ICP be? And I guess, I mean, that's a loaded question, right? Because I guess it depends on the company, right? I'm thinking about one of my clients, and they're selling into financial services and education and government and you know, manufacturing. I mean, they're all over the place with their product. And they have multiple products.
I think you got to start with use case fit. What's our product perfectly built to solve for? And there's a lot of ways to do ICP wrong and to say, you know, we're only going to sell to this sector, like only government. Maybe there's others that have a good use case, but, you know, is government and financial, what are the commonalities of the actual buyers that you're talking to? Government, I mean, that's just an enormous scope. You can't just say, hey, we sell to government, because that could mean all kinds of things. So you got to get down to which part of the government, what's their use case, what's their definition? And as you start to unpack that use case, you start to get more specific about, okay, this is the type of division that we're working with. This is the kind of product that they're moving, that they're selling. This is the title of the buyer, and start to unpack some of those details. The data is definitely out there, especially if you have a large enough market. There's lots of data that you can then roll back in to say, this could be 30 criteria that we're looking for. I think the more criteria you can apply, the better, because over time you start to say, you can start to refine that. You can start to find what the data and score the data, what data pieces have more components and value. Really good example I've seen, we were selling to a big financial institution in Canada, and we were speaking with completely the wrong people. They were really interested in buying our product at Splash, really, really interested in buying our product, but we knew it was the wrong people. And they did have a lot of budget, but for not the right use case. And so we just owned up to them, like, hey, you guys should be working with us, but not for this use case, not for this division. And they appreciated it. They agreed. And we said, this is who we're trying to get to in your bank. And sure enough, got an introduction. That was a deal that came in Q4, just in time. So it was, you walk away from something for the right reason, and you can find something also that's an even better fit. And what a massive waste of time, because we would have completely disappointed them if we tried to shoehorn that deal into our product. And we would never have had a shot at the other division, because we would have disappointed the whole company. So it comes back around. It's very virtuous.
So sometimes I see organizations, and whether they're selling security or some sort of financial something or other, their use case is also really focused on mid-market. And obviously, okay, we've gotten some traction. Well, now, Carlos, we want to go enterprise. What do you recommend for firms like that? Because in a way, the way their product is structured, the features and functions, its scale now needs to elevate, right? Because you got a much bigger use case or much bigger demands, right, on it. What kind of recommendations would you have for companies like that?
Almost every startup starts in the SMB or the meaty middle of the market and tries to move up. And it's hard. You know this, Carlos. It's hard. I feel like for whatever reason, I always seem to join those companies that are just really excited about going to enterprise, because it involves product, it involves process, it involves getting all kinds of new compliance on the back end. It requires all kinds of additional support and teams. And so one of the things I tend to see is that you usually end up with a couple of customers who were working for a mid-market customer of yours. They have themselves have moved to the enterprise. And yeah, you can talk to them about, hey, and in fact, they probably called you. They probably said, hey, I'm over here now. I love working with you. When I was at that small company, now I'm working for Meta, or I'm working for Cisco, and we want to buy your product. And lay it out with them, like, okay, this is exciting, but we want to make sure we meet the full scope of requirements before we get into this. Let's meet with your procurement team, because procurement knows. They want to beat you down, but if you go in proactively and say, hey, we want to make sure we meet the requirements before we get too far into this, you'll immediately find that you need to get your SOC 2 compliance going. You need to have a NOC who's on 24/7. You need a 24/7 customer support, whatever those requirements are, and then build towards that. If you're doing that defensively, it derails everything, and you feel like you're failing. Because one thing the enterprise customers can do is make you feel like you're doing everything wrong while they're getting a ton of value out of the product at the same time. I'm a big proponent of understand what your requirements are before you start making commitments. We've talked about this before, that sometimes the best deal that you win is the worst deal for the company. You win a great deal this year, makes your numbers, your growth rate jumps up, your Rule of 40 looks great. That customer goes away next year because they're completely dissatisfied, and they're never coming back, or they're not coming back until somebody leaves. Now you've done just the opposite. You've taken this biggest deal and sucked it out of your revenue. The following year, your growth rates are down. Your Rule of 40 looks terrible. Like, your unit economics look bad. So doing it at the right pace has some great wins. And one of the things I like to say to across the whole business, because ICP means a lot, particularly to salespeople and to marketing folks, but the whole company needs to understand. And it's easier to say, instead of we're going to focus on this ICP with the religion, it's a lot easier to say, we're going to build the best software for this industry. We are committed to building the best product for this industry, whatever that product might be. And that just gets everybody excited that we're focused on product, on the customer, on building something perfect. And that's exciting. that's really, really exciting. And it gets everybody rowing at the same pace in the same direction.
As you were talking, I was thinking about a client I had that was in the robotic space, and they were really early on. And, you know, I was like, oh, this is amazing. You got these robots. They can pick shipments out. I mean, think about this in an Amazon environment. Go, oh, girls, don't even mention it, because that's the type of client that could kill us. They'll take 18 months of a proof of concept, suck every dollar we have stored up right now, only to tell us, yeah, it worked. Come back to us in another year, and we might even buy it. And we'd be nowhere. So it's kind of, you got to be really picky about your ICP. But I guess, let me challenge you the other way. Like, hey, Eric, I get it. And I only have so much runway. So how do you get help in defining your ICP and making sure it's not too small or too limited or the wrong use case? How have you been able to get help in those areas to make sure it's meaty and juicy enough that you can have a market and a business, but not too broad that it drags you all over the place?
It's really important because, you know, I read a really great quote by Jason Lemkin recently, and he said, the chief priority of a CEO is expanding total addressable market. And that's a really good way of saying it. But I think one of the key words there is expanding. I think of ICP in very, very simple analogy is just, you know, you've got a dartboard, you got a bullseye. And when you start out your company, the bullseye is a really small thing, but you just got to get good at hitting the bullseye, hit the bullseye every time. And then as you get good, you start to expand just to the next little ring out there, and you're still on the same dartboard. And then as you get the opportunity, you expand, you kind of self-fund as you expand, or you raise capital to expand and expand faster. But if you put up 10 dartboards and you've got one dart to throw, you're going to miss 9. Right? You got to figure out which board are you aiming at and expand from within that. I have, and just to completely contradict myself for a second, when I was at Invoca, when I joined there as a small, less than 5 million revenue, and it was named Ring Revenue at the time, it wasn't named Invoca. And we did not have a good grasp on our ICP. We were selling to performance advertisers. We were trying to sell to brands. And when we talk about having completely different use cases and different priorities and different pricing for a company less than 5 million in revenue, we had two dartboards that weren't even in the same pool hall. They were not even the same kind of darts. And we wanted to sell to brands. That's what the last most recent investors at the time, it was Excel, came in, and we were focused. The pitch was, we're moving this business to sell to big brands. And we realized that the performance ad guys, who are our initial customers, worked really well with brands. And they actually needed, both of them needed us at the same time, but for very different use cases. And so we ended up building out two ICPs. But we also built out two sales teams, two product teams, so that they could be very, very focused on each of those use cases. And you know, we could have just continued selling to ad platforms and had good revenue. We could have just sold to brands and had good revenue. But we sold to them both. They also worked together because the ad platforms were feeding ads into the brands. The brands are buying ads from the ad platforms. And they both became customers that together really was a 1 and 1 is 3 for us. But that we still had a tight religion on ICP, but we broke it up so that the SDRs didn't have to learn two completely different languages, two different pricing schemes and all that stuff. And it worked really, really well. And the company's scaled tremendously since then.
All right. So Eric, just a question for you. So when we think about an ICP, is it about picking a use case that we could sell cross industries, or pick an industry or a couple of industries to even sell it within?
Yeah, it also depends on your business. You know, right now the stock market is really rewarding the companies that are vertical focused. And you can see it, their multiples are significantly higher than companies that are horizontally focused. And I think it goes back to the value of ICP. If you can find a way to be vertically focused and have a really big market, then do that. If I could do anything at any company, it would be, let's just focus on this massive vertical and be the only guys in this vertical, be the preferred choice for every buyer in this vertical. That would be a great way to go. And investors love it. The customers love it. The product team loves it. You just get to sail right through. And the times of my life when I've had that kind of focus have just been absolutely amazing. You're not afraid to buy the most premium platinum sponsorship at that industry's event because you know that's where all of your customers are. They're not spread out between 20 big events. So if you can get vertical focused, do that. Absolutely. But I'd say at least half the companies I worked for, especially in software, you tend to be horizontally focused. And when you're horizontally focused, you might think you can sell to everybody, but there are slices and verticals that you shouldn't be selling to. And that's where you carve them out and say, our horizontal focus excludes pharmaceutical because we're not HIPAA compliant. It excludes hospitals because we're not HIPAA compliant. It might exclude travel companies because, you know, we're not integrated with the unique systems that they have in travel and we're not planning to do it. That, I think, is a good way to take your horizontal approach and make sure that you've done the exclusion of who not to sell to, who not to market to, who not to sell to, what events not to go to, and make life easier.
I think back to the days that I sold CRM and our company, and I mean, we're a little all over the place, but Eric, what happened was we got some traction in the telco side, and at least we were smart enough to put a dedicated team on it, dedicated marketing, dedicated stuff to it, and it really made a difference. I mean, not only was it our biggest vertical, it's a reason we actually got bought.
That's a really good example. And I bet you that story repeats all over the place. The high value exits usually come with companies that have a lot of focus. A good example of one that had a lot of focus and a really wide horizontal play was Tableau that Salesforce acquired for billions of dollars. And they were, the CEO would regularly say, we're building the best software visualization analytics. And he was really focused on that. And they were really good at saying no to companies that weren't ready for it, or was the wrong fit, or that they didn't have the industry expertise for it yet, and or the data integrations and all that stuff. It's like, we'll focus where we can win. And eventually they were able to take over the whole dartboard, so to speak. You know, they focused where they knew they could win in a small space and then took over the whole dartboard. And a lot of respect for that company. They really did it right.
All right. Now, Eric, I could talk to you forever, but unfortunately we're not at the Joe Rogan level of podcasting yet, but hey, you know, I'm willing to try. So I've got a couple of closing questions for you, back to the personal side, because I mean, I think we always learn from people. So I know you've had a great career, but like all of us, we all have those missteps, those challenging moments in our career that usually teach us the biggest lesson. Have you had one like that that you're willing to share with me and a couple of people listening?
Oh man, the number of mistakes I've made, the missteps. Yeah, I feel like I could write a book about that. I think you make better decisions the second time always. But one that stood out for me, because we talked a little bit about, you know, this was a question you're going to ask. So I've been thinking, like, what's relevant for this? And it's one that I still feel some shame about, actually. Very, very early in my sales career, I was working for Catalina Marketing, and we had a customer who was buying a big project from us, big direct mail project, and a lot of analytics behind it, and really complex workflow back in the days, a long time ago. It was going to be a multi-million, I want to say $4 or $5 million project. It was my whole quota for the year. And I was already having a good year. This was looking really, really good. And it was moving along. We got verbal commit. We got contract signed and reported up to the board. This deal's coming through. And then they had a restructure just before the project kicked off and had a change of buyers. And you know, they were already committed to a contract, but they said, we're going to keep going. Like, we're not trying to back out of this. We just want to make some changes. We've decided we got a better understanding of our customer, whatever it is. And so we repriced a different program, and it was a much smaller program. It was probably half the size, but they were moving so fast, trying to make so many things happen. And I didn't take the time to reprice the deal. So they paid for the, you know, basically they paid double what they should have paid, and they had great results. The thing was success, you know, but then you get to the analytics and they're doing the ROI and people start asking, why was the ROI not better? Like, we killed it on this, but the costs were really high. And as we dug into it, I had to own up that, you know, and I did own up to saying, well, we didn't reprice it. And that was a torpedo to that relationship between companies. It was a torpedo to the personal professional relationships that I had built over the years, and was really, really embarrassing to be in that spot. Eventually repaired it. Eventually we fixed it. Those customers are still lifelong friends, decades long friends. We've worked together many times at many companies, but it's one of those learning lessons about doing the right thing. And I was too young to understand that I need to go back and say, we got to suck it up, you know, do the right thing for the customer. It's a long-term relationship. And I'll bet you they would have met us in the middle. I bet you they would have said, listen, yeah, we're not going to do the $5 million deal. This probably is $2.5 million. We can probably come somewhere in between, or maybe we put a little bit more into it for them, but never gave them that shot. So I learned a lot from that one about transparency and integrity that I'll never forget.
It might be leading us to the next one, which we call acceleration insights. And that's what's that one piece of advice you would give our listeners that would help them be as successful as you have been?
Anytime I've been in a company, I always say that the key reason of my success was always being religious around ICP. I mean, it's my topic. And I think really take it seriously because it'll transform your business and give you so much more confidence in your market and even a better market presence. The one thing you can do, just get really religious around ICP and get your whole team on board and you'll reap the rewards. It'll take a quarter or two until you realize, why didn't I do this sooner? This has made business so much easier, less drama. It almost becomes boring. Suddenly everything becomes so much more predictable.
It sounds like it'd be a good thing to also look if you're looking for a new home. Hey, maybe what I really need to do is, hey, as I'm exploring these organizations that are offering me positions, hey, how good are they at having a real clear ICP? Or am I walking into a hornet's nest where they're just trying to hit anything on the board?
That's right. You know, that's something when I've interviewed in the past, I really dig into that part, into the sales and marketing process. Because that's where the gunk is. And it always needs to be tuned up in some way or another, usually pretty dramatically. And it's more about the willingness to do it. Are you really willing to do this? Are you stuck in the ways that you're stuck in today? And if you can't commit to making that ICP, I'm not going to spend my time there.
Well, Eric, hey, thank you so much for your time today. If our listeners would like to learn more about you and the great things you're doing, what might be a good way for them to engage with you?
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn, Eric Holman. And I think it's LinkedIn/Holman. We'll get you right to it.
Eric, can't thank you enough for your time today. Really appreciate it. Great catching up with you as well.
Thank you.
And folks, that does it for this episode. Please check us out at www.b2brevexec.com. Share this episode with your friends, your family, your pets. And you can also check us out on YouTube, Spotify, Google, whatever your favorite podcast platform is. I know on Apple, if you do subscribe to the podcast, please give us a 5. We'd really appreciate it. I'm Carlos Noche, and until next time, I wish you nothing but the best success.
You've been listening to the B2B Revenue Executive Experience. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in iTunes or your favorite podcast player. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.